And welcome to this, the August 2nd, 2009 edition of Ford Forum. John Quinlan here, and have a very fascinating discussion ahead for the hour. I'm going to be speaking with Janelle Orsi on the line from out of Berkeley, California. Janelle is the co-author with Emily Daskow of a great new book that she'll want to have in these challenging economic times. It's called The Sharing Solution: How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. And I was really excited as I was reading this book. I discover a lot of resonance with stuff that's going on right here in Madison. That includes the programs like the community car share program, co-housing programs, and different efforts to share groceries and elder care. And I think especially something that's innovative that had a lot of its roots here, and that's the Dean County Time Bank, which is an effort for folks to be able to do good things for each other, essentially, to barter and to share services, do good things for the community, and actually get some credit for that and be able to reciprocate with each other. So again, fascinating hour ahead, learning about these variations on the sharing solution. Again, our guest for the remainder of the hour joins us from out in Berkeley, California. And her name is Janelle Orsi. She's the co-author with Emily Daskow of a book called The Sharing Solution: How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. And she actually models that whole sharing idea because she and her co-author actually share an office space. But Janelle is an attorney living and working out in Berkeley. Her law and mediation practice is focused on helping individuals and organizations share resources and create more sustainable communities. And she specializes in nonprofit, small business, and real estate law. And previously, she was executive director of Women Defenders, a professional organization of women defense attorneys. She worked in a very wide range of legal practice areas, including criminal defense, youth law, immigration, adoption, LGBT rights, police misconduct, and estate planning. Janelle, welcome to Forward Forum.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it's so great to have you here. And you know, I was telling you, you know, this is a theme that's really resonant here in Madison. Of course, out there in the Bay Area, where a lot of innovative solutions happen. It sounds like a lot of great things happening there. But is this something that's taken hold in other places in the country as well?
I think so. I mean, actually, it sounds like Madison is a particularly cool town, just from the sound of what you have going on there. But I think that there's a lot happening around the country where people are starting to realize that they can make just incredible strides toward living more sustainably and saving money and generally improving the quality of their lives if people just come together as communities and neighbors and friends and start to find ways of sharing things that they would normally own themselves, or start cooperating and doing things together, the things that they would normally do them all by themselves. And so we've seen around the country the growth of car sharing programs in almost every major city. People are starting to share yard space for food cultivation, start neighborhood tool lending libraries, more child care cooperatives, and that kind of thing. So I think people are ready. People are realizing that the way we've been doing things has been, you know, costing us not only a lot of money, but just it's a major cost to the quality of our life and to the planet. And so I think, yeah, this is happening.
Well, and you're alluding to this, but you know, it's tempting to talk about this mostly out of necessity. That, you know, these are challenging economic times, and so it does make sense for us to share resources, cut down on expenses, and that kind of thing. Right. But you know, a lot of the guests that we've talked to through these last several months have emphasized, you know, if there is a silver lining in a challenging economic time like this, it's maybe that we are beginning to have more communitarian values, or beginning to look at the world differently, looking at that, you know, that thing they call a footprint and our impact. And instead of, you know, this incentive of just going out and buying and consuming more and more, having different values that embrace community and the things we can do together. Does any of that resonate with what you're finding?
Oh yeah, and I think people are just realizing that buying and consuming isn't what's making them happy, and what's making them happy is actually having a community of supportive people around them, having fun things to do with others, and just building up a satisfying community. And so maybe a lot of people are coming to sharing out of necessity. A lot of people are sharing housing out of necessity, or people are starting to share cars to save money or to reduce their footprint. But what they find out is that they're just connecting with people who they may not have connected with, and just making the community a really much safer and more resourceful place.
As we go into this, I just want to point out to folks, have put up several different local examples of this up on our blog, which you can find at forwardformexchange.blogspot.com, or just go to forwardform.net. These include our own co-housing programs, the Madison Community Car Program, which has been going since 2003, and an innovative program called the Dean County Time Bank. And actually, let me start by asking about that, because I'm not sure that I necessarily saw that concept reflected in the book. Are you familiar with the whole idea of time banks?
Right. Yeah. It's actually just something that's growing up, but all of a sudden, very fast. And we just got our first time bank in the Bay Area. And what it is, it's a bartering network. And we do talk about barter to some extent in the book. But we don't go into that much detail. But it is, you know, it comes hand in hand with a society that's starting to look at alternative ways of doing things and alternative economies. And so the way the time banks work is that usually there's a website that kind of administers it all, but you sign up and you offer your services. And so I'm signed up in the one in the Bay Area to either offer legal services or pet care, which is my other favorite thing to do.
Uh-huh. Me too.
It's probably what I'd rather be doing, walking somebody's dog. And so for every hour of either legal services or pet care that I put in, I accumulate an hour in this time bank that I can redeem for somebody else's services. So if someone's providing car repair or bicycle tune-ups, I could redeem it with that person.
Well, as we come back into after our next break, we'll go into some of these other specifics again of examples in housing, transportation, sharing services. This also could be how you look at the care of an elderly relative, for example, and being able to set up different things. But I think another thread that's in the book that's really important is don't get bogged down in a 10-page contract or something like that, but do set out some really basic principles of understanding before you enter into a sharing agreement with someone. I used to be the director of our local tenant resource center here, and of all of the problems that we had, I think the most difficult ones were co-tenant problems, meaning roommate problems, because most of the time you have this legal relationship where you're very much dependent on what somebody else does or doesn't follow through, but don't have really anything else necessarily, compelling the other person to do the right thing or to honor your agreements. And that was the hardest area of the counseling that we went through. But our basic thing was, hey, communicate and be very clear. And if you have to draw up some separate written agreements so everybody is clear, and it seems like that, as a public interest attorney, is something that drives a lot of what you're trying to communicate in the book.
Exactly. Yeah, when people come together to share and cooperate, it does create the potential for conflict. And we think that the best way to overcome that is to communicate in advance. So one thing we do in the book is give a list of 20 questions that you should talk through with almost anybody that you're sharing. And so those questions are things like, how do we divide responsibilities? How do we divide expenses? What happens if somebody can't make expenses? What are our standards of cleanliness? What do we do about insurance? And so there's this whole series of questions that we think people should go through, because once you have talked through them and possibly even written them down, then you kind of know, you can feel secure and to know, like, what's going to happen if the thing we're sharing breaks. Like, you don't have to worry about it because you've already thought about it in advance and you know. And so it's a great way to prevent conflict. And then when conflict does come up, we give people a lot of tips about how to communicate about it without putting each other on the defensive or offending each other.
And then ultimately, if you still can't get something done, there's an extensive section talking about what a good system of mediation looks like.
Mm-hmm, right, because when people are cooperating and sharing, going to court is the opposite of that. It's the most adversarial thing that you can do, and our court system is designed to make people fight each other, basically. And so it's not a realistic way to solve problems at all, and we encourage people to either attend formal mediation or just have a third party informally mediate so that people can maintain their relationships and sort through the conflict.
All right. Well, we do need to take a first break here, and thank you, by the way, for sharing your time with a couple of community organizations. We modeled that nicely, I think, going into the show. Again, we're speaking on the line from out in Berkeley, Janelle Orsi, and she is a co-author with Emily Daskow of a book called The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. Once again, resonant with a lot of stuff happening right here in Madison, community car, co-housing, cooperative ways to buy groceries, provide other basic services. And if any of you are involved in some of those efforts and want to talk up the benefits, or maybe talk about some of the obstacles that you encounter along the way. And welcome back to Forward Forum. Again, the topic for the remainder of the hour are variations on title of this fantastic new book, The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. We're very privileged to have on the line from out in California, one of the co-authors, Janelle Orsi. And again, we really invite your participation, 321-1670. If you have some local examples or some questions about how this might all work in practice. Janelle, you know, just a more general principle to put out there before we go into some of the specific manifestations of this. Mm-hmm. We live in this country that sometimes gets defined, I guess, as you know, that the notion of asking for help or doing things sometimes other than you know, through the power of our own individuality, it's almost seemed like, you know, against the ethic that this whole country is all about. You know, how do you counter that with people that are maybe hesitant to ask for help, to work collaboratively? You know, and do you really think that you know, at base that is true, that we are a country that has to, you know, think in those same narrow terms, perhaps?
Well, I think that, I mean, in many ways we are a country that's gotten really used to doing things on our own. Like, we each have our own homes. I mean, we aspire to have our own homes, our own cars, and fill our homes full of everything we might ever need so that we don't have to rely on other people. But in reality, we do rely on each other. We just don't interact face-to-face so much, but we really rely on our whole global economy. We rely on overseas manufacturing, and so we're not exactly rugged individualists anymore. But I think people are starting to realize that this is just costing them so much money, that they're overworked, and realizing that when we start to open ourselves up to cooperating more and to sharing more, it feels good, and it opens the floodgates of generosity. And I think people are naturally cooperative beings, and it even releases endorphins when we cooperate with each other. And so I think we should get past this idea that we all need to have our own stuff and start to figure out how we can help each other out more.
Yeah, I think one of the things your book makes clear, too, is that many of the solutions that are proposed aren't either or, that there is still an opportunity for personal space, privacy. An example would be the whole arrangement of co-housing. Again, it's something that we're very proud in Madison that there's some innovative examples.
Yeah.
But I noticed you had kind of a footnote where you're describing how co-housing works in practice, which you know, in part is to share common areas and meals and maybe community gardens, upkeep of the property overall, and yet everybody still lives in their own unit. And you were saying one of the things that perhaps that addresses is the notion that you have to be an extrovert, you have to be extremely social, and that for somebody who might be a little bit more laid back or introverted, that this doesn't necessarily work. But I think you had a good answer to that.
Right. Well, you know, I don't even think that I'm quite an extrovert, but I live in co-housing, and, you know, introverts don't dislike people.
Uh-huh.
I think that we like to have a lot of our own space and a lot of our own solitude, and we're not necessarily the life of the party, but it doesn't mean we don't like people. And I live in a co-housing arrangement. It's a very small kind of, we call it casual co-housing, where there's three households, one in back of us, and then my neighbors across the street, all intentionally moved in near each other to form an intentional community where we just share a lot of things. So I share the garden space at my neighbor's house. We share meals twice a week. We share a lot of things like vacuum cleaners and laundry facilities and tools and bicycle pumps. And then the children who live behind me and across from me also have extra aunties. And so it's just a really wonderful place to live. And I feel like I get the kind of community and support that I need. And at the same time, I have my own space and my own my own unit.
You know, as you're describing the arrangement that you have there, too, it reminds me of another theme I wanted to pursue with you, seeing some of your background and your co-author, Emily Daskow's background in terms of LGBT families and family rights. It has always struck me that there is this ethic there that I think other groups have too. It's not exclusive to us, but I think it's something pretty special in the sense that because we haven't had a lot of the legal framework or a lot of the stuff laid out for us, we have to be innovative. And so we come up with new ways of doing things, new agreements with each other. But you know, the other thing you're talking about is the benefits of those aunties that, you know, are in the neighborhood. We also, as a group that's looked at it by some folks on the far right as threatening families, we actually are embracing old ways of doing things in the sense of extended families, you know, families of creation that go far beyond just that core.
Exactly. I do think the LGBT community is very creative, and it's in part out of necessity by the fact that we haven't been fully embraced by all of society, and many of us live away from our families, or we have to choose carefully where we live so that we feel safe and accepted. And in this particular community where I live, it's three households, all lesbians. And we also had a fourth household for a while. It was a gay male couple who were the kind of uncles to the kids. And we do have to get creative and form these kind of villages to ensure that our children have a supportive community around them.
Yeah, but once again, of course, this is something that I think the LGBT community has embraced. It's something that does apply to everyone. I wonder also. Some of this is semantics, but you know, we're talking about community, but on some level, again, we're also talking about creation of new family structures as well, sort of defining family a little bit differently. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, it's kind of hard to say, you know, to define what is family or what is community. But I mean, with my neighbors across the street, I have a relationship that's far closer than what I would normally have with typical neighbors. And their daughter does call me Auntie Janelle. And we spend a lot of time together and we share meals together. And it does feel, in a sense, like having a family. And it's just so nice to have that level of interaction with people. It's much deeper than what we would normally have with other neighbors.
In my own experiences, back 20-some years ago, answering a roommate ad for a lesbian couple who was about to have their daughter, and we had this very strict conversation about honoring boundaries, and, you know, they'd had roommates before who they'd got kind of close to, but, you know, with mixed results, and so, you know, we were going to just be roommates and keep it very legalistic, and within months, you know, we had become family. I was invited to be there at their daughter's delivery, and, you know, had been Uncle John, you know, in the 2 decades since, and so sometimes it surprises you how that happens and blooms spontaneously, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Well, again, to get into some more specific things, in you know, as we're talking, I think this is becoming apparent to our listeners, perhaps. But you know, there are benefits here, I guess, for the individual, but also benefits here for the earth and those concepts of the footprint that we leave, the carbon footprint, and you know, just the toll we take when we drive into work alone and don't take advantage of carpooling or some of the other programs that are out there. Community car idea, how is that manifested, say, in the Bay Area where you are?
Well, in the Bay Area, we have a few, just two major car sharing programs. And so all over the cities in the Bay Area, there are cars that are parked. And if you're a member of the program, you can either swipe a card or enter a key code to get access to the car, then use it for around town trips, and then return it, and then have the mileage charged to your account, basically. And so that's one model of car sharing that we're seeing happening. But also, people are doing their own kind of casual car sharing with neighbors. And I mean, it makes a lot of sense to share a car with a neighbor, mainly because you live in proximity to each other. But there are many people who have cars who don't use them during the day because they might commute by bus or train. And there are other people who work at home and need a car during the day, but maybe not so much in the evening. And so those are two people who would make really great candidates for car sharing. And I think the average household in the U.S. has 2.3 cars. And so a lot of households could at least get down to one car if they knew that there'd be an extra car they could use when needed.
Yeah, here in Madison, I think a lot of the folks who've been part of community car, they haven't necessarily given up a car completely, but they have maybe gone from two or three cars down to one. Mm-hmm. you know, other variations on that. You know, the other example that I put up on the website too is that, in addition to benefiting individuals and families, the Madison Community Foundation here managed to help subsidize an arrangement where a community car is used to deliver Meals on Wheels for a local nonprofit group, and that's resulted in enormous savings for them. So this is, these are kinds of concepts that can be applied in a whole lot of different ways. Is that
right? Right. Yeah. I mean, sharing is something that can really benefit nonprofits and small businesses as well. And you know, the cost of starting up new enterprises is huge. And if people come together and share resources like a car or an office space like I do, or share a commercial kitchen space or other equipment, it can just make it that much easier for people to set out on their own and start these things.
Well, what you describe often is some of these more innovative programs, you know, things that may not have been around for decades. But I think the other great part of the book is that it also applies to things that, that families have been doing for years. For example, sharing the care of an older relative. And some of those same agreements and questions to ask and just a framework for accomplishing those things in a way that takes the burden off of a few individuals, other things, you know, they apply to something like sharing the care of an older adult as well. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. And we just want to make it easier for people to get creative and consolidate resources. I mean, especially with elder care, that can require a lot of time and or money. And so we just want to empower people to figure out how they can cooperate with others, maybe purchase services together, purchase in-home care together. And what we do is give people the tools to set this up. And by tools, for the most part, I mean written agreements that address how it's going to work, who's responsible for what, how are you going to share expenses, and that kind of thing, so that people can take these agreements and plug it into their situation.
Sharing doesn't always imply total equality either, or you know, there can be, for example, when you talk about car sharing agreements, there's a table that describes an arrangement perhaps where someone is the primary owner of the car, and yet they make blocks of time available to a housemate or someone else in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But again, it seems like it all comes back to that clarity of expectations and communication.
Right, because people will be coming to a sharing arrangement for different reasons, and some people are really hoping to save money, or other people are really just hoping to take part in something community-oriented, or maybe they're just trying to make their green footprint smaller. And so it really depends on where people are coming from, and it's good to make sure you've sorted out all those different expectations so that everyone's on the same page.
Another great aspect of your book is I think it's a good guidebook that can be applied also for people that are part of small volunteer organizations of all kinds. And so you talk about effective ways to run a meeting and make sure that everyone is heard. Of course, the importance of not just speaking but listening, and some really practical ways to frame conversations in ways that are non-threatening. But one of the other things that I think is fascinating that hopefully someday will have application to our national and local elections is some alternative ways of making decisions. It doesn't always just have to be majority rules.
Mm-hmm, right. And we talk about a different type of decision-making called consensus decision-making, which we think is really important when people are coming together as equals and sharing something and cooperating. Because if you have a group of, say, 10 people who are sharing an electric vehicle, let's say, in the neighborhood, and you need to make a decision, and 6 people vote yes and 4 people vote no, those 4 people are going to feel kind of marginalized or alienated by the decision, and it might not even work for them. And so when you have a different decision-making process, such as consensus, what happens is somebody makes a proposal, everybody gives their feedback, and they modify the proposal until it pretty much works for everybody, until people can at least be okay with it. And so it keeps everybody involved. It's very democratic, and it's in the spirit of cooperation.
Absolutely. Well, again, as we come back out of our last break here, I definitely want to explore some more specific stories, give people also just a sense of some of the other very valuable resources you offer in the book. And our guest is Janelle Orsi, the co-author of The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. This is Forward Forum. And welcome back to Forward Forum. This is John Quinlan, and we're speaking with Janelle Orsi. The book is The Sharing Solution, how to save money, simplify your life, and build community. Are there specific things that occurred in your life? You've already talked about your housing arrangements, but things that motivated you or made you aware through your law practice that a book like this is something that's needed?
You know, there was one thing that inspired me a few years back. I saw this movie called The Power of Community, which is about how Cuba, after the oil embargoes, pretty much had to completely change its food system. It used to have a very industrial agriculture system that was reliant on oil, and they ended up having to start using every spare piece of urban land to start growing food. And, of course, in the United States, we're on the verge of having the exact same problem of pretty much running out of this energy source we've been so reliant on. And so I started to think, well, in the cities, we actually do have a lot of land we can use to grow food, but the fact is it's people's yards, it's people's private property. So I started looking at the legal implications of people sharing yard space for food cultivation and, you know, looking at are there tax incentives, are there liability issues and that kind of thing. And what I found initially was that a lot of people were saying things like, oh, no one's going to share property, people aren't going to open up their yards. But then since then, just in the city of Berkeley, which is a pretty small city, there have been 500 people who have signed up to share their yard space for food cultivation, which is, to me, a huge vindication, which is showing me that people are ready to share and they are ready to open up their private land to create these innovative community concepts. And so these are all either people who have land that they're willing to let other people farm, or they're people who are interested in growing their own vegetables who don't have land space. So, but a lot of questions do come up about, the homeowner's worried about liability, and they're wondering if there's any zoning issues that could affect it. And so I just think it's important to give people the answers and the tools so that they can start doing this.
And the book is great about placing in perspective this whole issue of liability, that yes, there are natural considerations that need to happen because things can go wrong and you need to protect yourself. But conversely, there are some solutions, and that includes insurance or something else that you allude to. Sometimes it makes sense to form, say, an LLC or some kind of a structure where liability is limited.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are definitely ways that people, when they take sharing to new levels, like let's say you have a neighborhood group of 10 people sharing a car, they don't want to have to be liable for each other's accidents. And so in that situation, what they might want to do is form like a nonprofit corporation or a limited liability company that's going to own the car. And that nonprofit or that company is going to also carry the insurance for the car. And so that clears up who owns the car, it clears up who's going to be liable, and so it's a much safer way to handle that situation.
All right. Again, this is Forward Forum here on Madison 1670. This is Forward Forum on this edition. Excuse me, apologize, I misplaced my notes here, but we are speaking with Janelle Orsi, and she's the co-author, along with Emily Daskow, of The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. 321-1670 is the number if you'd like to join in. This whole area of sharing law is that something that is a relatively new development? Is that something that you see will continue to grow?
You know, I think that it will continue to grow because as people start to share more and cooperate and take sharing to these new levels I'm talking about, like neighborhood car shares and neighborhood tool lending libraries, it's going to be important that in every community there are people who can help sort out the legal, the administrative, and logistical parts of these projects. And so I do hope that eventually there will be lawyers in every community whose main focus is helping people share resources and build more sustainable communities. But in the meantime, this is sort of, I would say it's definitely very cutting edge. But I do think it's definitely going to grow.
You know, some people think that the sharing automatically requires a greater investment of time, but you contend in the book that it's a time saver. How would that be true?
Well, there's definitely, not everything that's going to make your life simpler is going to save you time, but there are a lot of things that you can do in sharing that will save you time, like dog walking cooperatives where you take turns walking each other's dogs, or child care cooperatives. So these are, and actually the thing that I do with my neighbors with the meal sharing, I cook for them on Wednesdays and they cook for me on Mondays, actually turns out to save me quite a lot of time cooking. And so there are definitely things that do save time. There are other things that might involve putting in more time. Like I'm part of a grocery cooperative in Berkeley, and I'm also kind of doing like a casual buying club with my neighbors where we purchase things in bulk and then split them up. And so in many ways, it does take a little bit more time to administer that, you know, to make the orders and split it up and divide expenses, but I'm saving money. So there's, you know, costs and benefits to everything we do, but to me, it's worth it.
Well, and just to punctuate that, you know, here we have some of these 24-hour huge grocery stores that are available. And generally, if you're thinking in terms of saving money, I think that's the direction people go. We do have food cooperatives, too, and while people are, I think, understand that there's probably a little bit more that you pay for that, that the quality and the customer service, the freshness is all part of that. But to come back again to these arrangements, sharing fresh produce that comes from the, you know, from the nearby countryside, you actually can save money. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, in many situations you can save money, and other times you're reaping other benefits. And
yeah,
like the example of the grocery co-op that I'm involved in, it has a threefold mission. One is to save people money. Another is to buy only sustainably produced organic products, and the third is to build community. And you know, if I really wanted to save money, I would shop at Costco, or I would shop at Safeway, you know, one of the big 24-hour bright light grocery stores.
Right.
But I do want to buy products that are organic or locally produced or sustainably produced, and that's, for me, the cheapest way to buy them is through this cooperative. So, and I think for me, the most fun part of being part of this cooperative is the people that I've met, and it's just all really cool people with great intentions, and because we do 2.5-hour work shifts every month, so we get to spend time with others. And so those, to me, are the real benefits. And I might not be saving as much money as if I were shopping at Safeway, but I am saving money when it comes to buying good quality products.
Well, it sounds like with all of this, it's not a single motivation. It's just really this fusion of benefits for you as individual and a family, but the community building benefits, and then, you know, the benefits to the world as well.
Exactly.
Let me just explore just a couple of other specifics. I think that are, you know, fairly common experiences here in Wisconsin, where many folks have a vacation home. There are possibilities of sharing that. Could you talk a little bit about kind of the pros and cons of something like a timeshare agreement?
Yeah, well, definitely sharing is a great way not only to meet your needs, but to get access to luxury items you might not normally be able to afford. And purchasing a vacation home with others is, for many people, the only way they're going to be able to own a part of a vacation home. And in many ways, there are, you know, there's a lot of administrative hassle or a lot of, you know, planning that has to go into it. So if you have like 10 people who are going to buy a vacation home, there's definitely a lot of planning that'll have to go into it. But then again, people are going to have a tenth of a vacation home and have a place to go at least a month out of the year.
One other area we haven't had a chance to explore is perhaps sharing in the workplace. And that has a number of different manifestations. Could be sharing the workspace, sharing a common meal at midday. But I guess one of the things that intrigues me is more than one employee sharing a single employee. How does that work in practice?
That's usually Clear. Like small business owners, small-scale entrepreneurs who can't afford necessarily to have their own space or their own employees. And so where I work, we have an office suite of 1, 2, 3, 4 office spaces and about 7 attorneys. And so some of us share our actual office with another person, and others just come in and use the conference room or use the copying machine and the mailing address. And so it keeps all of our costs low. And then for a while, a couple of the attorneys were sharing an employee who was kind of part administrative help, part receptionist, and it'd be a huge expense for one attorney to do that on her own. But the two of them together were able to save quite a lot of money.
All right, and am I right then in your own situation, you and your co-author actually share a common workspace? Is that right?
Right. right. Yeah, we're both part of this office suite. I actually have an office space that I share with a mediator, and she only comes into the office to meet with her clients in the conference room. And so it definitely keeps her costs low. She doesn't actually have an office space in there, just using it on an irregular basis.
All right. Well, one of the things you invoke as we close out the interview here is a quote from Alice Walker. And it's a very simple quote, just that sharing is the answer. Do you have in a couple of minutes just some reflections on how this may become more and more the answer for us in a economically challenged world where we're also trying to respect the environment more and more in our daily living?
Sure. Well, I do think that sharing is pretty much the missing ingredient in our efforts to make the world a better and healthier place. And there's a lot of things that we're all doing in isolation from each other. A lot of us are trying to, reduce our energy use, reduce our waste. We recycle, we put solar panels on our homes, or, all these things that we're doing. But when we come together and do these things as communities, if we form a solar power cooperative, if we start helping each other compost on a neighborhood level, it just really compounds the power of what we're doing. It makes it much more powerful and impactful. So, but I think sharing is the answer because it's contagious, and people are, once it starts, I think it's just going to feed on itself and open up the floodgates of generosity. And it's something that everybody can do. You don't have to be rich to share. In fact, sharing is most likely going to save you money. And it's in people's self-interest to start doing this. And so I think that in that sense, it is the answer. It's going, once it takes hold, I think it's going to grow fast and really change what our world looks like.
Yeah, just about 30 seconds. But through your blog, I imagine you're also realizing some of the new media aspects of this, ways that people can share with each other worldwide.
Right, yeah. I mean, every day there's new developments and new technologies that are helping people share. So we're trying to keep up with those on our blog, which is www.sharingsolution.com.
All right. Now, I highly recommend it. Some great resources. Again, we've been speaking with Janelle Orsi, and the book is The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. Lots of links on our website relevant to this off of forwardforum.net. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you so much.